Hi, this is Jack Fong for the Talking Data Podcast. I'm from Search Data Management, and with me is my colleague Ed Burns from Search Business Analytics. How are you doing today, Ed?
Doing great, Jack.
Well, that's a gas. I'm glad, because we're going to go over one of our favorite topics, machine learning, which you have covered the heck out of lately over the course of this year, 2016. One of the things telling the audience that got us going on this topic is a little conversation here. About a week or two ago, Salesforce had their conference, and it featured Mark Beninoff and another person on stage with a cartoon character in the form of Albert Einstein. And Einstein, as you know, is the name for a whole bunch of Salesforce AI technology. And having gone back a ways in this whole area, I was somewhat chagrined, because Einstein did look a little bit like Mickey Mouse. I wondered, has it come to this? There was a lot of hope for AI to change the world. Maybe that's good or bad. And I saw some of those rollouts. I was there when Clippy came around, and I'm wondering why I should think differently now. And I think, Ed, you have some ideas of that vein.
Yeah, I do think that there are a few factors that kind of differentiate the AI that we're seeing today from what we saw in the past. I think that one of the biggest factors is just the amount of data that's out there right now. We know that when you're training these advanced machine learning, deep learning algorithms, the more data you have to train them on, the better they will function. And so over the past years, as big data has come on the scene, and now pretty much every business is doing some version of big data, the amount of potential training data that these algorithms have is just so vast that it seems like organizations are more able to train their algorithms and get them up and running a little bit more quickly than in the past. The other really big factor there, I think, is compute power. You know, back in some of the days you were talking about, in the earlier phases of AI, I don't know about the concept necessarily, but the practice of parallel computing was not so much established. But these days we're seeing a lot of that, and so these really advanced algorithms can crunch through those huge volumes of data much quicker than they were ever able to in the past. And so that enables them to function maybe not real time, but closer to real time, and so people can interact with them, have conversations with these computer programs. And so it seems like we are seeing a little bit more practical applications. And that would be the third factor I would point to, is just that when people talk about AI these days, they're not talking about some general form of intelligence that can perform virtually any task you throw at it. We're talking about much more modest applications that are geared to perform a specific task and do it in an intelligent way. So I think that that's another factor in why the AI that we're seeing today is a little bit more successful than what it has been in the past. We aren't trying to replicate the human brain. We're trying to maybe replicate human sight, or, you know, the ability to process language, something like that, which are still obviously huge tasks, but not anywhere near as complicated and difficult as replicating the entire human brain or the entire method of human thought, like AI projects in the past seemed to try to take on.
Well, yeah, I was fortunate to have a lunch with one of my old-time colleagues who was involved in AI in the early going the other day. That was Richard Soley, now the head of the Object Management Group. And talking about translation, he described to me how they used to do it back at the MIT AI labs in another time. And it was a lot of rules-based, complicated stuff going on. Well, what has Google done? And I'm pretty, I think it works. I've been talking with my friends in Italy, and nothing's gone wrong so far using Google Translation. And they just trained it over a massive amount of data at Google. I know a story that I read of yours dealt a little bit with how in a Boston insurance or investment company was sort of correlating a lot of data they had with news and media feeds. Is that an example of where AI might be going?
Yeah, so this was John Hancock. I did an interview with one of their representatives, and he described to me a deep learning project that they're working on, which basically ingests various reports, whether it's the formal financial reports filed by companies or news media reports on certain companies, and they use this data to develop recommendations on the quality of the stock for those companies and make determinations on whether or not they should invest in those companies. And so this was a process that used to be entirely manual. There would be an actual person sitting at a computer looking through all these free text reports and basically making a subjective decision on their own judgment and experience. But now it's much more systematized and automated. And what this person was telling me was that they're able to go through these reports and generate recommendations much quicker now. And so, yeah, I think to your point about, this being something that is not just in the realm of Facebook or Google, I think it's true that when we were first hearing about this maybe a year or so ago, or at least when it was first, being revived as a popular topic of discussion, it did seem like it was very much kind of research related, Google and Facebook trying to figure out how to teach machines to, write a caption for an image, something like that. It's kind of hard to see a practical implication for that for most businesses. But I think now what we're seeing is it is becoming a little bit more common. It's kind of trickling down more to the average business, and more organizations are finding applications for it.
Well, we covered the data aspect. The other one you mentioned was computation. And that's a curiosity to me personally, because having covered hardware during my existence, I'm interested to see what they're doing. It seems to be, to some extent, a game for the big cloud players, and that we include there is Google, Facebook, Microsoft. Big daddy of all right now is Amazon Web Services, and each of them is using graphical processor units to some degree. Although those are in gaming hardware, so they're not totally uncommon by any means, they do cost more than CPUs. It seems as though they're starting to rely on the GPUs for training and going to the CPUs for what they call inference, or we might call runtime, when the thing is actually trying to figure out the answer to your question. But I was pretty shocked. We see some use of field programmable gate arrays in this realm, and Google even for the TensorFlow. While they are using CPUs and GPUs, they've also built their own custom ASIC, which is not something that most of us can manage to do. So we're watching how the big players do, and if they build good enough services so smaller companies can use their cloud services to do the kind of things that John Hancock did that you discussed. And a company I didn't mention, but I should, is IBM, which I know you're about to head out to the Watson event that's upcoming.
That's right. So keep an eye out for some updates next week.
So that's Jack Vaughn. And again, I'm with Ed Burns, and we are glad you were with us on today's Talking Data podcast.